It's Friday, and that means another edition of our podcast, The Zogby Report, Real and Unscripted. As always, I'm John. Here's Jeremy, father and son. Lots of times two different perspectives. Sometimes, at least on the important issues, a lot of agreement. And how are you doing?
I'm fine. How about you?
I'm good. I'm very, very good. Nice holiday. And so let's get right into it.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
I want to do two things today. The bulk of what we'll talk about is Build Back Better. And whether or not it's on the cusp of passage or a slow and steady extinction. And then in about 5 minutes only, there's an article that came out that I just read prior to coming here. Are humans on the verge of extinction? I don't want to spend too much time on that, but I'd at least like to toss it around a little bit. So
yeah, it's a Friday, you know.
It is a Friday, yeah. They're a little heavy. Build Back Better. It is today where it's been yesterday, 5 days before, 3 months before. There are not going to be any Republicans supporting it. It can be passed via what's known as reconciliation because it's a money bill. That requires a simple majority, not 60%. Simple majority in this case means 50 Democrats. And then an ultimate vote by the vice president who would break the tie. The difficulty, of course, has been the two Democrats, Joe Manchin from West Virginia, Kyrsten Sinema from Arizona. I'm going to go out on a limb and then explain that I believe that it's going to pass. I may be dead wrong in this. I have zero in terms of inside information. But here's my analysis. Joe Manchin, of course, is a Democrat. He was the governor, you know, of West Virginia before he became U.S. Senator. He has seen the transformation of West Virginia from a Democratic state in his lifetime. Jack Kennedy won it. To a conservative Democratic state to now, in fact, as of yesterday's certification by court, Virginia is clearly as red a state as you can get. Joe is the last statewide Democrat in office, and he's up for re-election next year. It's a conservative state no matter which way you look at it. And so what's giving him pause, obviously, as he's up for re-election, is the notion of big government spending, socialism. That's the sort of thing he's hearing a lot in the state of West Virginia. And so he has been difficult as far as the Democrats are concerned, and he has been able to whittle down the total value of the bill from, what, $3.2 trillion. He drew a line in the sand at $1.5 trillion. Now we're at about $1.85, maybe $1.95 trillion for the bill. There's a lot that says that Joe Manchin does not go for this bill, with this exception. West Virginia does not like big government, but it does like pork. And money from the federal government has been substantial to West Virginia in not so distant history. The majority leader for a while in the 80s and 90s was Robert Byrd. He also was president pro tem of the Senate, Democrat. But Robert Byrd was able to bring in billions of dollars to West Virginia, and nobody complained about it at all. In addition to that, West Virginia is in the process of redefining itself away from the sort of hillbilly elegy image, not my term, the bestseller's term, towards the new Silicon Valley of the United States. No corporate taxes no income taxes, all sorts of shovel-ready, ready-made incentives for new industries, particularly high technology industries, to come in. In order to do that, West Virginia is going to need some money. We then get, finally, along the same theme, there is an infrastructure bill that did pass, is now law, and a Build Back Better package that's going to mean, quite possibly, no matter who gets their way, worker-ready West Virginians who can then take jobs in this this new booming technology sector. I don't know that Joe Manchin wants to be the guy blamed for having slowed down that process when potentially there's a lot of money that can come. If Joe Manchin goes to the side of Build Back Better, I think Kyrsten Sinema follows. Arizona is a very interesting state demographically, but it's also very interesting in terms of its legacy. It is really now the state where rugged individuals with bipartisan, nonpartisan images kind of dominate. I look at three major characters in Arizona history. Barry Goldwater, of course, perceived, in fact, was far right, and then achieved that image of being almost the iconic rugged individual. John McCain bears no real explanation. John McCain was conservative, but kind of the conscience of the Republican Party. Kyrsten Sinema, to some degree, is that kind of eccentric,
maverick
kind of an individual. But the other two guys got things done. Mm-hmm. She's in a position either to get something done or to be blamed forever and ever as a one-term senator who blocked her own majority and her own president of the United States. So that is my semi-informed opinion. I think it will pass.
Yeah.
What do you think?
It's difficult to predict these kind of things when it comes down to one or two people, right? Because as you said, without the inside information of what kind of pressure is going to be put on them, you know, they have to face their legacy. There's obviously some behind the scenes pressure, and how are they ultimately going to calculate that? But also, it's on the side of the voters, right? And they have to cater to their constituents. So while that promising future of the Tech Valley could be on the horizon in West Virginia, ultimately that comes down to the desire of it from the voters. And so the only insight that I can add into that is the current situation that we potentially face. And so as we've seen, I mean, it started with gas prices. Mm-hmm. And gas prices, you know, have gone up through the roof. It then moved into a lot of other areas of day-to-day staples, including the price of lumber that were rising. You see elsewhere in countries reverting back to the use of coal because coal is cheaper. And so I'm not making any predictions about a reemergence of an energy crisis. I mean, we may already be, actually, in an energy crisis. And you've seen these nations that have reverted back to coal because of its cheapness. And so, you know, I was reading an article about a week ago, and people are panic buying lumber. And that's sending lumber back up the prices. You see this kind of going, you know, on nationwide, whether it's in terms of finance or whether it's in terms of living, a kind of moving off the grid. You know, people are taking their resources and their assets, and they want more control over it, and they want to know that they have it, and they're not really so sure that it's good in other people's hands that they don't know. And so we're seeing that lack of trust in the system. You know, there was another story about an increase of interest in people buying wood stoves. Mm-hmm. And so this is all, you know, kind of sounding like what happened in the 70s 2.0, right?
Yeah.
Stagflation, inflation, an energy crisis, scrambling of the public to respond to that crisis by being self-reliant. And so if you look at West Virginia and you ask yourself, what is the culture, what is the mindset there, how do they fall into this? Are they thinking about Tech Valley, or are they panic buying lumber? Are they stockpiling lumber? Are they longing for the days of coal as oil and as gas become more expensive? We saw what happened in Texas last year, where here was a state that, you know, took the initiative to make about 20% of its energy infrastructure windmill-based. And there was that horrible, you know, Arctic blast that resulted in the deaths of dozens, if not maybe 100 people. And because they weren't ready, their energy grid almost collapsed. So with that kind of in the background, you almost have to wonder, okay, well, we can see on the political side where people are going to calculate, but ultimately, how are the constituents going to drive the politicians to make those calculations? So that's the only thing that I add to that, is that there's that whole other dynamic, is the mindset of people who could be thinking winter is upon us and maybe this is the dark winter.
So very importantly, coal is a major consideration for Joe Manchin. Are West Virginians happy with coal? They sure are. It's an industry that employs a lot of people, that they hope will continue to employ a lot of people. And in terms of blue-collar work, these are among the best blue-collar jobs in the country. Pay, health care, pensions, and so on. Losing coal is a major strike at the heart. Now, with that said, the country is against coal, and the movement towards the future is against coal. And this war is being waged, and it's a war in West Virginia that Democrats are losing, to be sure, except if West Virginia can move rapidly towards the tech industry, which of course promises not all good paying jobs, but a lot of good paying jobs. And so how does that happen? That happens with real incentives to investors and real incentives, period, to move into the technology industry. That is something that Joe Manchin can be a hero.
Yeah. On. Yeah, and I mean, this conversation is flowing great because the themes keep coming back up, and we've talked a lot about these themes, but, you know, when you were saying, like, what Manchin and Sinema have to deal with in terms of, you know, their base and saying this is big government, this is socialism. And of course, those are the talking points. But again, you know, what the voters, at least this is my interpretation of the data and the trends, is that I think to the voters, it's beyond socialism. I think it's beyond socialism and big government. I think it's more what strikes at the heart of it is globalism.
Mm-hmm.
And that Build Back Better isn't something that Joe Biden came up with. This is an echo that is you're hearing all over the world from the most powerful institutions, the most powerful global institutions. You know, Justin Trudeau is saying it. Angela Merkel is saying it. Boris Johnson, mm-hmm. you know, Christine Lagarde, the IMF, and you get the picture. And so I think from their perspective, And I talked about this in you know, what happened in Virginia, is people are saying there are things that we can control around us, but there are things that we can't control, you know, that mm-hmm. are greater than us. And so when we talk about coal not being the winner of the future, and I think, you know, I think that's true, that for most Americans, they would like to move beyond coal. I think much of the world would like to move beyond coal, but I think the economic realities of short-term survival are what's going to make coal in and what's going to keep coal something around for a little bit longer. That, in other words, until we actually get to a point technologically mm-hmm. and investor-wise and in terms of a market for these next-generation energy technologies, we're going to have a rocky road, right? Talking about that potential energy crisis on the horizon. So actually, I want to say one other thing, and it'll tie into our next conversation, but, you know, Build Back Better is definitely losing. And mm-hmm. and we were, you know, privy to a call, which we can't get into too many details about, but there's a big association that was what we're talking about, losing on the messaging and not connecting. And everything that I've laid out is exactly why, because it's perceived as from the ivory tower, it's perceived as from the resorts of Switzerland, the city of Davos. And a lot of people can't get behind that because it's not talking to their day-to-day life. It's talking about 40 to 50 years into the future, 10 to 20 years into the future, and we got to get through this winter. Mm-hmm. And so actually, we don't need to segue right now, but that's a good segue into the notion of our existence and our, you know, the article you read about our potential extinction.
Yeah, let me just make a further comment. I don't disagree with what you just said. The problem is not just big government and big government solutions. It's elitism and elite, no matter how you define it, as billionaire elite, intellectual elite, or just folks in a position of power who happen to think that they know and are better than the rest of us. We're in a transition. And so the real issue is, I mean, we have to make transitions to clean energies. We need to make transitions into electric cars and living differently. The real issue is, when do we finally do that? I mean, nobody's talking about, you know, on a certain Friday afternoon in the future, locks are put on all the coal mines, you know, all the plants that have been producing fossil fuel-driven vehicles are shut down. But we are talking about phasing in and phasing out. But the thing is when you pull the trigger. None of what we're talking about wasn't being talked about 40 and 50 years ago. And at that point, we were warning. Science is saying 2030, 2030s, and now it's 2021. So there's going to be some short-term pain, but the Build Back Better, as I see it, is a way of helping to make that short-term transition. The way it's playing out, I totally agree with you. It is very similar to critical race theory and social and emotional learning. It looks like and feels like something that's being thrust upon people and taking their position as parents and individuals, controlling their own lives and facilitating the lives of their own children away from them. So I'm with you there.
Yeah, and I guess what else that I would say, you know, the public gets confused still because, you know, if you look at, and I was lucky, I didn't go back to the microfilm and examine every month of Time magazines going back to the early 70s, but somebody had done that, and they had put over the years what Time magazine had projected and predicted what would happen, and this wasn't from Time magazine, these were from scientists, climate scientists, and it, you know, in the 70s they were talking about, you know, the next ice age, mm-hmm. right? And then again it was repeated in the late 70s, and then somewhere in the 80s it turned and it said, well, actually the planet is heating. And so then the imagery then became about the polar ice caps melting, mm-hmm. And, you know, we were hearing about global warming and the greenhouse effect, and then it changed to just flat out climate change. And nobody, I think nobody is going to deny the fact that there is climate change. I don't think anybody's going to deny the fact of our impact on the environment. You know, and humans have been poisoning the environment, right? Mm-hmm. Fukushima is a big topic, I think, needs to be front and center. And the prospect of another one of those happening could be devastating. But the ability to predict weather-wise what's going to happen, I mean, just go to the Weather Channel and see how wrong that can be. So I think the public gets confused about, well, what is it and what's going to happen? And yet, is it really the only way to transition towards those future next-generation energy technologies are through these gigantic pieces of legislation? Or like it's happened in the past, where we had the first industrial revolution and then the second industrial revolution, those came through market forces. And the last thing I'll say is that it's a fact that when humans make a transition in terms of a new way of producing energy, it usually takes about 30 to 40 years. Is that something that can be hammered through legislation? Or is that something that happens through market forces and investment? I think that's the key question.
I lived long enough to see legislation change our lives, not from Friday afternoon to Monday, but significant social and economic legislation. And I'm going to leave it at there. I'm going to leave it at a gentle disagreement with you. Now, are humans on the verge of extinction? The thrust of the article was, in the name of progress, birth rates are down. Dramatically in the West, even more dramatically, though, in the Southern Hemisphere, you know, in Africa and China. It may not appear that way, but women who were on average delivering 6.5 babies are delivering 3.2 babies. That's huge. It's significant.
Yeah.
At the same time, killing the food supply, at the same time abandoning whole regions that have been sustainable regions, and in the process, we're at a point of reducing the growth of growth rates of the numbers of humans, and eventually reaching a plateau where there will not be enough labor and productivity to sustain, you know, what we have, 8 billion, then to 9, 10, and 11 billion. We're not talking about an extinction taking place in the year 2042 on May 15th, but we are, in this article anyway, potentially talking about, together with artificial intelligence taking over. This is the Yigal Hariri, I could never forget his name, argument, which incidentally I don't buy.
Yeah.
But this was just kind of a compelling article. Are we on the verge?
Well, I mean, as we approach the new year, or potentially the last year, or the final year, this is something that we can think about. But yeah, I mean, no question about it. There appears to be an onslaught of a lot of things, and you know, I find it very interesting in terms of a contradiction that when you hear the word sustainability, it usually comes from these global institutions that envision themselves as global bureaucracies, the future governing system, a global government, if you will. And to me, that seems about the least sustainable thing that you could have. And that if you're talking about, you know, the food supply, it would make more sense to localize it, right?
Uh-huh.
And but no question about it, there is the threat of the food supply, and I wonder if Scientific American covers this, but I mean, a lot of that has to do with the degradation of topsoil from a lot of the pesticides, the uh-huh. overuse of pesticides. I don't know how much they're talking about that. I hope they are. But, you know, I guess in the end, I'm of the mindset that when Mother Earth is ready to chew us up and spit us out, Mother Earth will take care of that. We've got plenty of volcanoes. We've got, you know, plenty of tectonic plates shifting. Again, the question is how much can we do about that? I think when we are talking about, you know, certain kinds of pollution, there are things we can do. But that's about as far as I can take this
that's
heavy conversation.
That's about as far as I can take it, too. Yeah. I have nowhere to go with it, simply on the basis of the lack of knowledge. So let's leave the folks with our lack of knowledge,
yeah,
then. Okay.
Yeah. Hey.
Okay. Enjoy your New Year's Eve, though, especially
yeah.
this
yeah, year. Yeah, I don't think it'll be the last
okay,
one.
Okay, good. We'll leave on that prediction. Good.